and welcome back to a Think Peace podcast with your host, Aaron. Today is an exciting day. We are on our fifth Think Peace podcast covering the newsletters. So without further ado, I'm going to jump right in. So it's finally Wednesday, and I don't know if I rather cry, laugh, or just sleep the rest of the week away. Today marks the fifth week of my Think Peace newsletter, and boy, has it been a trip. It seems as if there were a ton of holidays this past weekend, and boy, has it been a trip. It seems there's been a ton of holidays this past week. Normally, a three-day weekend feels fantastic, but in the COVID-verse, it just feels like another 5 years. To those who don't get the weekend off, hopefully you have a good Labor Day holiday. Now, this is obviously covering the holiday of Labor Day, so bear in mind. This week, I wanted to try a different approach to my stories. You know, I wanted to do less news and more stories that involve life choices, advances in technology, reconnecting with the past, and how to improve oneself in these trying times. So I wanted to bring everybody a little bit of cheer, a little bit of self-recognition, a little bit of, you know, goodness. So let's begin, shall we? Moving to the market. All right, and now we move to the market, which at this period of time, back in 2020 of September, the full effects of COVID were really taking its toll on the economy. Between everything from a majority of stocks fallout and worse, but it also has some gray lines, or I would say green lines, in some of the cases that now I'm going to be revising, looking up, and comparing them from previous times back then, which is literally 2 years ago, well, almost 2 years ago today. So, with that being said, you had some of the stories that were prevalent at the time, where the FTC is preparing an antitrust case against Facebook, which is currently changed to Meta, and it had hurt its stocks severely. The S&P 500, which is American Industrial Index, which was ended in higher hopes that the Fed will continue to support markets. Now, this was prior to inflation, so it's very, very important to make that acutely known, because at this time, the Feds were avoiding raising any interest rates, which allowed the markets to just keep going with cheap interest, cheap loans and stuff. So people had, not necessarily people, but brokers and banks and stuff had money that was cheaper to lend. So then there was no new stimulus bills at the time, which seems to be a prevalent thing back then. And that was the case. I remember the stimulus checks coming out and stuff. But we had a different president at the time, and needless to say, that president, which I will not name, also was touting about a vaccine at the time, hopefully. So, you know, at this period, I was questioning all that, but considering how the markets were volatile and, you know, doing everything but what they needed to do. Needless to say, the markets ended bad here, but in retrospect, it's interesting to see where they have either grown or fallen to. So, getting to begin with that, we'll start with Facebook, which is now Meta as well. At this period in time, it was losing money. It was down to $267.94 a share. As of today, me checking it as of the day of recording this, it was up to $295.04, a substantial percentage change, obviously. Almost, I believe it'd say, my math's not right, but it's a substantial change, easily over 5% change in the positive from 2 years ago, which is interesting, because the next case, at this time, the client or conference video app called Zoom, I covered it this time. At this point in time, it was $411 a share, which that day it had grown up over $41 in, you know, income. But checking it today, it is below 60% of that threshold. It is hitting around $136 a share, which is that's a far cry from what it once was. Three quarters of itself was lost between now and then. And it's a reckoning to the fact that a lot of people are pushing for going out and some form of going back to normality. So what does that mean for all these companies that were big when everybody had to stay home? Were they a fluke, or is there probably another turn somewhere down the road for them? Or is there an opportunity for them to gain what they once was or lost? That is to be decided in the future. And so my next stock that I was covering was Disney, which is interesting, considering I expected Disney to be significantly higher than it was at this period, because this is prior to Disney Plus and their streaming content. And it was, Disney was really pushing a lot of their streaming content and whatnot, and trying to get into the field with Netflix and such. But needless to say, at this point in time, they were $131 a share, and they've only increased barely over a percentage by $135, which is just, it's interesting. In the span of a little over a year and a half, 2 years, they've barely increased their value, which is interesting considering everything that has happened between them acquiring Marvel and every other studio unknown to man and releasing tons of content on a streaming service, which is considerably big for a company of this size. I mean, Disney is no small company competing against like Netflix and stuff. They have the war chest to be able to outcompete them, outspend them, produce all sorts of things. So it's really just interesting to see that growth, or what little of there is. Next was my one of my least favorite apps to ever use, but it is quite necessary in most cases, Uber. So Uber at this period in time was $37 a share. But since then, it's actually lost value, which is kind of strange considering at this period in time in September 2020, the world was closed in. There was nobody taking Uber, no one going out and doing anything. But it had a still real strong, it grew actually during this period. But now it's lost over a percentage of its value to $34 a share, which obviously is not too terribly much, but it's just interesting to see in the span of over a year and a half to 2 years that, you know, we're entering a world where we can go out and be participants. But it's also, I think, the great resignation in the United States, where people have seen how little their jobs value their own lives. And so they've taken it on themselves to be like, okay, I have an opportunity to get a better job. I get an opportunity to make an income that is the value of what I am. And so they took the notion, and Uber was a big proponent of this gig economy, where they trash people a lot. They don't take care of their workforce, and they make them freelance labor, and they just have a tendency to downtrot their own employees. So I think they also took a big hit from that, the Great Resignation, as well as COVID. But it's just interesting to see where they've came in this period in time. And last, and certainly absolutely the least, one of my least liked companies I ever deal with is AT&T. It originally was at this period of time $29 a share. Since then, they've lost value too. They're down to $24 a share. And if anyone in the United States is listening to this, you 9 times out of 10 know exactly AT&T is a communications company that is notoriously ridiculous. Their customer service is some of the worst. They have some of the worst customer service and communication systems around, but they love to charge enormous amounts of fees. And if you're one of the unlucky ones that lives in an area where AT&T is just predominant, like there is just no other communication group or cellular company that can, you know, provide service in that area, you're just stuck with them. And so that's a case in a lot of America. So with that being said, AT&T, I can understand why it lost value, but at the same time, it's kind of interesting considering they have not a monopoly, but they have a pretty strong foothold in quite a few regions, and just seeing their value goes down, I guess they were not performing adequately or to the ways they needed to. But that will conclude the stocks reports. So I also have a link down below in the description. If you're in the United States and you're interested in stocks, which I highly recommend, it's interesting to get into, but I highly recommend doing your own research, because I am no way offering any stocks, any suggestions to purchase or research. I am only presenting my opinion. I'm presenting things I've noticed and just talking about numbers that I've seen and just reminiscing on what I view in these stocks. But down below, I have a link to check out some interesting platforms that enable you to be able to personally handle stocks and deal with that and actually do your own due diligence and research on them. So I highly recommend that. It also helps me a little bit, but in no way, it's a fun little hobby I do, but in no way, shape, form, or fashion am I recommending any stocks, nor am I suggesting any purchases. It's entirely on you on this one. So needless to say, they're just opinions, and we all are entitled to one, but it doesn't make me recommending anything. So with that, we are now graciously moving on to our next topic, our segment, What in the World?, covering stories that are all over the world, the ones that are the most important. In this current one, we focused on two very big situations that kind of went under the radar in America and kind of goes under the radar in foreign affairs in America. The first story, a seedy situation. Seems Americans aren't the most up-to-date when it comes to handling mysterious seeds arriving in one's mailbox from China. Hundreds of Americans in all 50 states have received these said mysterious seeds. Many of the seeds are harmless, while others remain a mystery. But once the story broke, the USDA was swamped with emails, calls, and letters about these seeds. The official message, destroy the seeds, do not plant them. But for some, that message fell on deaf ears. Many cases have been made where many Americans thought they simply forgotten that they had ordered the seeds, going out and planting them without a second thought. And in the most extreme cases, few actually ate these mysterious seeds. Even more so, many Americans were furious that they had to pay the postage to send the seeds to the USDA to investigate them. And even more ridiculous was one recipient in North Carolina who said this, I did not receive seeds. I received a suspicious package from China with a spoon and a fork in it, and my concerns are it's full of COVID. Needless to say, this story was one of the ones I paid close attention to as the preceding months came on, and I actually have a full conclusion and a concluding story later on in the series. So if this has sparked your whistle or has sparked your interest, you need to stay tuned for later think pieces that have come out, and I'll cover the conclusion of this, what in the end came up. And also additionally, you can look down below in the link and it'll cover this story as well. So our next and final topic, how does the picture look for the 2020 and 2021 in this South China Sea? Well, needless to say, at this current juncture, things were rapidly progressing into a very hostile high stakes game of cat and mouse between many of the local countries in that area. But with this article, we start with all things that are related to 2020. The tensions in the area will only continue to rise as we enter into 2021. China's continual push into the South China Sea will only exacerbate those tensions, but not only with the U.S., it will also exasperate tensions with Asian neighbors. Notable nations that have begun responding are the Japanese and the Australians. While both enjoy strong trade with China, the growing threat to the region will further prompt them to actively move to a reactive stance in order to challenge China's growing presence in the region. Meanwhile, the nations of ASEAN, primarily Vietnam, Indonesia, the Philippines, and Malaysia, will be torn between maintaining their sovereign integrity or capitulating to the great power actions of their giant northern neighbor. This will take diplomacy and cool heads to chill out the ever-heating tensions in this region. And since the publication of this specific think piece, the situation in the region has only escalated not to conflict, but on borderline conflicts between now it incorporates civilian vessels, which civilian fishing ships from China that move all through the South China Sea into the special zones of the nations that I mentioned, like specifically the Philippines, where they have boats that fish in their economic zones, which have been a problem for the Philippines and their government in order to deal with them while also maintaining peaceful relations with China. And other countries in the area, Vietnam for one, have been constantly harassed and being harassed by the Chinese fisher vessels. Additionally, the Chinese passed the law to equip their National Guard, their Coast Guard with assault weapons and offensive capabilities, which is very unheard of for a Coast Guard. If you ever know of any National Coast Guards, they're specifically designed to be active in helping, rescuing, and being a passive force that is more not a military active threat. That's simply for the Navy. But the Chinese, on the other hand, have decided they would equip their Coast Guard with assault weapons and offensive capabilities, which only exasperate and further antagonize any situations in the region. But I also cover many other freedom of navigation actions committed by the U.S. in order to further promote the openness of international waters in the South China Sea, which the Chinese have countless times been very, very, very hostile and very aggressive in the sense of saying, hey, this is our territory. We control all the sea. You have to go by our laws, which is a continual expansion of a more imperialistic nature and a hegemony in the region. But as we move forward, this sort of story has been taking a backseat burner to the new rising issue in the Eastern Europe area saga, where Ukraine and Russia are involved heavily with potential conflict rising in Europe and also dragging in the U.S. But this area holds a special place for me to always have a gaze on. And continuing from this story in later think pieces, I cover more in depth of what is transpiring, specific events, and what actions propel one nation to react to another. Specifically, all this is geared towards China's ever-expanding, growing aggressive stance to the world of its region and to the world international community and its surroundings. So, needless to say, I will continue to review and also produce articles related to this specific region of the world. But with that comes a close to this section, and so we move on further to our next section. And continuing on with Out of the Loop section for all the stories that we covered in this think piece number 5, you don't have to be friends to work together. It's been the running theory that in order to induce cooperation, you need to be friends with one another. This seems to be not the case in one study. Empathy doesn't always overcome political lines. In some cases, it can actually make it worse. In order for America to get back on its feet, it doesn't need to be friends. It needs to just simply find common ground and a clear understanding of what is and is not political. Or so it would seem, as the story addresses, which it is a very, this one is an interesting story to think about. Well, yeah, that's for me anyway, it comes off as common sense because, you know, they're going to be on your side initially to be your BFF. If they're your BFF or your friend, they're already on your side, so you don't need to convince them. You're convincing other people across the aisle from you who have different viewpoints than you. You need to convince them that your idea works just as well for them as it does you. So you don't need to be friends with them, but what you need is a working cooperation for one another and be able to build a partnership from that. So that seems like, for me, checks out. And also the article is really good, so I recommend you read it. And now, moving to a case study that I found highly interesting that is relatable to most of the world and potentially, specifically, a lot of more impoverished areas and third world countries as they would consider them. But it also is a very big problem in the United States too because of similar reasons. But in this case, why so many Filipino teen moms? Never has it been simple to break from tradition or beliefs, even when it can cost you and another their life. Such is the case in the Philippines. A lack of reproductive education, access to contraceptives, and draconian laws have been the enforcers of this tragic state of affairs. Though those are only possible due to the state of disbelief in both open conversation, separation of church and state, and with the additional fear of becoming a societal pariah. In this scenario, it's very hard because traditions and beliefs, as I mentioned, do have a prevailing issue with taboos, and sex is a very, very big taboo in most conservative religions and conservative cultures. And the fear of talking about sex means you recognize it and means it's active and potentially going to happen. And so a lot of conservative cultures and conservative bodies, political thoughts as well, really crunch and punch down on the concept of not having these talks, because if you don't acknowledge it and don't believe it's real and don't act like it exists, then it doesn't exist, which is a complete ignorance of the problem and completely just pushes it down towards like literally equivalency of just like blacklisting it. And that's a big problem because now you have these scenarios where you have these teens don't know what they're really doing. They think it's a game or they think it's just fun, casual, whatever, because they don't know the societal, they don't know the consequences of their actions in this regard. And so it's a societal degradation at this stage because of the sheer lack of discord on this matter. And it happens everywhere. It happens a lot of places. I know specifically from the region I hail from in Appalachia, Kentucky, and Tennessee. It's very predominant and very, very profound that these sort of talks and sort of discussions are really just like crunched down and no, hush, 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 hush. You don't talk about that stuff. It's taboo. And it's a state of affairs that's just tragic for everybody and no one really wins. And so it's an excellent read, this article was, and it's just an interesting topic to really try to wrap your head around and understand that, you know, we know the solutions to these issues, and it just takes understanding and a willingness to break out of these norms and these old belief systems that not are necessarily evil, but they are led by ignorance, and it's not a correct method to solving future problems. But, you know, what can you do? You're only one. But regardless, we have one more subject, and this one's a really good one. I recommend everyone go and check this link out for sure and check out the books that's offered. So there's the catch. So many books free to a good home. In our lives, we are accustomed to buying our books, even the classics of Shakespeare, Homer, and many other literary works from long ago tend to cost us a pretty penny to own. But what if I told you that many of those very authors and books are now available free online? And I mean free. Anybody can have them. Anyone can get them. True, though, they will not have that good old smell of an old book, an aged old book, or the spine disintegrating as you're turning that page. But hey, a free book is a free book, right? So last year, which is 2020, last year, many of these classics were released into the public domain for consumption and repurposing, which is meaning they're available to everybody for reading, to rewrite, or to make their own adaptations of them. So, you know, Romeo and Juliet, hey, how about Romeo and Fabio? Or, hey, how about, you know, Hamlet? How about Hamlet with a basket of eggs? I mean, your imagination is running rampant. Run wild with it. It's a great treasure trove of books that await you on this. So, honestly, if you're a reader like I am, and you are just passionate about books, and then you also, you know, you can't afford them, because books can be high. I mean, heck, you go to look at any of the bestsellers, look at the current costs of some books now, they're thousands of dollars. Some are like $20, $30, $40, $50 or more. So, hey, you want to read, you want to get a good collection, and you really want to get like some of the real, maybe you want to get some of the classics, and those things cost money too. Here's an option for you. Let's bypass these middlemen, and let's get some quality literature into the hands of these avid consumers of literature, right? So I'll have that link down below. Be sure to go check it out, and I highly recommend you tell me what book really got your fancy when you see it. But that ends our Out of the Loop section. And moving on, we enter our next section, Life Hacks. Now, this one is a specific article that I had originally wrote, and it's in a series of advice, hints, and little hacks that I discovered on my travels, where I give you some ideas and suggestions and just a little bit of tidbits on little things you would never think about while traveling that are really, really quintessential to like the making travel so much easier. And I won't be reading the whole article this time around, but in a later episode, like several other articles that I have personally wrote, I will be plugging in and reading it then. So I'll provide a link down below, and if you want to read it, it's perfect. And I highly recommend it if you're a traveler like me. So with that, we'll press forward to another section that is, it's entirely one that you have to visualize. So it's pictures of the week, obviously. And this one, I covered two military craft vessels from two rivaling nations. The United States aircraft carrier. The United States is a premier military power that focuses on naval aircraft and everything revolving around oceanic forces. So I featured in this one the latest, most advanced American aircraft carrier, and I focused on that, the aircraft carrier of both of these navies. So I picked the predominant ones, which is to say the USS Gerald R. Ford of the Ford class aircraft carriers is the one, obviously, is the latest, greatest model of the aircraft carriers coming out from the United States. It's a replacement class for the Nimitz aircraft carriers. It's the most advanced carrier in the world. And so is the class. The Ford class is the most advanced carriers in the world. It uses an electromagnetic aircraft launch system to catapult planes from its deck, which is one of the only in the world that actually do this. Most of the others use a launch pad that uses a ramp going up. This uses a electromagnetic system that is pretty much like a slingshot and pulls all the plane all the way back to the back of the drawer of the plane deck, and then boom, launches it. So it doesn't sound as neat when you think of it in that terms, like a slingshot, but for advancements in aircraft design and aircraft launching capabilities on aircraft carriers, it's quite advanced. The ship itself and the class roughly range, the ship first, will range 100,000 tons. That's a large number to say. So this class is the biggest of the aircraft carriers. Will range around 100,000 to 150,000 tons. It is also part of the nuclear class group that is powered by nuclear reactors. It is powered by two A-1B nuclear reactors, which gives it up to 60 plus years fuel, which keeps it running all over the ocean. So it doesn't need fueling stations or coal or oil or diesel like some of the other aircraft carriers do. But the United States has been a pioneer in the sense of nuclear reactors on aircraft carriers and other naval vessels like submarines and such. So it's one of the few that's has this capabilities in the world. It is estimated to hold 75 fixed-winged fighters, helicopters, and other aircraft. So it is a massive, massive ship with a massive deck that is capable of projecting air power in any region or theater of conflict around the world, as long as there's a sea there. Then the next is America's next upcoming contender in the dominant field of naval vessels and naval aircraft carriers. It is China with their People's Liberation Army's Shandong aircraft carrier, which is the first of its necessary kind. It's a Type 002 Chinese aircraft carrier. It's the first one domestically built. Originally, they had purchased one aircraft carrier off of the Russians. And so they started with that blueprint and then started redefining their own design and working from there to design their own aircraft carrier in order to project their power onto other neighboring islands, neighboring areas. It uses a stow bar, which is a short takeoff but arrest recovery. So it is pretty much a system that launches planes from. So it is essentially a ramp that you have to build up enough speed at the very back to launch yourself off of. So the aircraft has to do a majority of the work in order to take itself off. And it's a very, very short space to do that. Imagine an airport, right? You know, if you're in a plane, you wait for takeoff and the plane's got to get revved up and goes, those engines, and then it flies and then slowly it takes off. You have to have a very, very, very long runway for that. And so this, in essence, is this runway is about the size of two soccer fields, if I'm guesstimating correctly. But that is not enough space for a plane to get enough momentum to take off in the air. So what they do is they build a runway that goes up into the air. And then when it goes, does that, it gives it the momentum and also the air, the ability to get enough air underneath its wings to take off and be able to sustain itself in the air, you know? It's not a slingshot in this case, but it's a ramp, so you can get air time. And then airplanes just need enough momentum initially to get powered up to get to that point, and then they have to have the air underneath their wings, enough air underneath their wings to keep that momentum up and be able to pretty much glide before they can power themselves on further. It's roughly 66,000 to 70,000 tons. This is a variance of what, at one point, what the ship's size initially is, with or without aircraft personnel and other extras, ammunition and such. So it's roughly, it's really not that small, but it's only 3/4 of the size of the Ford class, the one initially mentioned. Now it's powered by conventional steam turbines with diesel generators, which is what I was mentioning before. It needs to have diesel fuel in order to perform and maintain itself. So it cannot go out into the sea for perpetuity in theory, or, you know, 60 plus years, and it will need to have a fueling station in between there. It has to come back and get fuel and such. So it's not a nuclear-powered one like the Nimitz or the Ford of the American classes. Now, it is estimated, this one is, to hold between 18 to 24 J-15 fighters, which is the Chinese special jet fighter, and 17, now this is really long, and there's a series of them, so bear with me, and supposed to be able to hold 17 KA-28s, KA-31s, 7 8Ss, Z-8Ss, Z-8JHs, and Z-8AEW helicopters. These are all types of helicopters. Obviously, they range in variances in size. So it holds a total of 17 of any or all of those. So it's that helicopter specific type is mentioned because Certain ones will and will not fit on naval craft, and some are specifically designed for aircraft carriers. Some are specifically designed for, say, cruisers or destroyers or helipads built on ships. So those would be specifically designed for that cruiser, or a type would be. This is specifically designed not for land, not for any of that, but for an aircraft carrier of this size. So that's why there's a lot of numbers and a lot of types. It'll be able to hold an additional 4 fixed-wing fighters or 8 helicopters, potentially. So that means is when it gets to the bigger size, if it's a 66,000 tons, it'll be able to hold the initial numbers, the 18 to 24 to 17 jet fighters and helicopters. But if it's on the bigger side, the 70,000 tons, it'll be able to hold an additional 4 to 8 jets or helicopters. Depending on the final product, that's the kind of measurements you're looking at. So one, the U.S. has a dominance in the aircraft carrier industry and also in the ability to project power in this sense. But there's a reason for that. The U.S. has already had an initial 60 to 70 year head start on most other nations since World War II, when the U.S. pioneered necessarily bringing these guys to the foray. But China has recently, as I said, since the 1990s and later, has been catching up. And this is one of their most advanced aircraft carriers. And this has been some time back, I believe in 2020. So they've jumped leaps and bounds considerably. If you think in the span of what it took the United States 60 to 70 years to get to where they're at, this is where the Chinese are at with their aircraft carriers, which is a formidable force nonetheless. But in comparison overall, it may and may not be able to compete one against one another in a direct head-to-head part. But you got to look at also what does the United States have to do in order to project its power and in what it needs to be able to do that. Projecting power into other regions and other spheres of the world, oceans, seas, and the like of those. So the U.S. has already has had to focus on defending and operating in two oceans, whereas China only has a very, very substantially large coastline, but it doesn't have the same concerns of projecting itself further out in the oceans. But they never had the need for that. Things are changing now in the world, so then they're going to have to be focusing their abilities to project their power, in a sense, challenging the U.S. Both of these aircraft carriers are remarkable in their own right, simply because of their needs and how have they met their needs. And I think, for the most part, both are quite interesting to look into, even though they're machines of war, which is, it's not pleasant, but they're magnificent to just behold that human engineering has led us to this point. If preferably we could go towards civilian and more peaceful manners, we would have a better life, I feel like, instead. Regardless of those, I will provide some imagery and some extra little stats of those on in the link below for to you if you were interested in those ships and stuff, which I am. So we will pursue further into our last section. Progress is made from history. Now, in this, it's a specific article I wrote, and I'll provide also the link for it. And I highly recommend, if you're interested or if it sounds interesting, be sure to click on the link and go check out this article. It's one of the few but many I wrote that includes a great detail in history of particular events in history in the world, places, and it kind of sheds light and opens one's eyes to things that you may have never thought about, you know, like how did the Red Cross come about? Well, this story kind of leads you into that. It actually does lead you into that. So if you're curious, by all means, read it. History is full of mistakes. It's also the proven roadmap to progress, however painful it might have been. In this installation, I decided to take a very specific approach to the subject at hand this week. A period in which men fought each other in one of the most horrific manners, at a time when neither side could find any ground. A battle that was tactically a disaster for the winning force ended up being the catalyst that inspired a nation to fight for a reason. It also inspired advances in humanitarian aid and medical responses. It can also shed light on a point in which many Americans feel we stand at once again. This is the Battle of Antietam, the American Civil War. It's actually pretty good. I've visited the historical site, like the actual battlegrounds. It's I mean, it's worth a visit. It's worth understanding the history and seeing, if you're an American, seeing where we came from, seeing how we are somewhat heading down a similar path where we repeat history and such. Where we come from is a pivotal and important part of who we are as a people or as a person. I absolutely recommend everybody, even if you're not an American necessarily, or actually just not American at all, it's always interesting still yet to learn another place's culture and history, because you may inadvertently learn more about a person or a place or a thing. You might find a new interest of wanting to go there. By all means, let your curiosity run rampant, I say. With that, we will conclude this think piece. Everybody, I hope you have a great time, have a great day, have a great night, wherever you may be. I hope it's safe. Until our next episode, I wish everybody a good time. Take care.